Welcome back to our roundtable and to the roundtable panel this morning. It's a delight to have you all with us. Joining us in the studio, WAMC's Alan Shartok. Ray Graff is here, and University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo. You may be freezing to death. However, you are about to enter the warm confines of our roundtable panel.
Nice. Well,
hopefully not death, right?
No.
I mean, let's keep it light, and let's hope everyone stays warm, and there is a real hazard there. So,
boy, there is a real hazard there. When I got out this morning, 3:30 in the morning, getting out to the car, I'll tell you, it was like...
Did you look at the thermometer?
4 below.
Yeah.
4 below.
Best thing I ever invested in, it turns out, was a remote starter for the car.
Oh, fantastic.
Really?
Oh, so, yes, it
cost a lot. Do you have a garage?
An unheated, garage. The car is
still freezing. At least you have a garage. I remember the days when we didn't have a garage. We lived out in Alford, Mass.
Yeah.
And I remember there were 5 days it was 20 below.
Oh,
and what you do is you get, your car won't start. And so what you do is you get a light bulb. And you put it in the car.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then I got dangerous because I'm sure I was not supposed to do this. Then I started to cover the car with all kinds of tarps, things like that.
Why is that dangerous?
I don't know. Something could catch on fire maybe.
With the light bulb in it.
Oh, with the light bulb.
Oh,
I see.
Absolutely.
I understand.
And then I got an electronic dipstick. That you could
That was
sure
great.
Yeah, no, it's true.
But enough about those late night ads you watch.
Stir, mix it, enjoy, and make up your own joke.
Yeah.
You guys, really, that's filthy. But you took this dipstick and you inserted it right into this.
And oddly enough, the turkey was done.
And sometimes it didn't work. And then I made the...
Sometimes it didn't work?
And then I did this beautiful thing. I had a farmer down the road who used to go to the Department of Social Services, and he would drive me. You know, so he'd go in early, too, and he would drive me. And then I got a diesel. That was a terrible mistake, because in those days, diesels got turned at a certain temperature, would turn into paraffin wax and get on the thing that the fuel went into, the whatever you call that, the Framis. The Framis.
You mean the conduit from which the tube flows,
but there was a mesh.
You have totally lost control.
I know, and I have no idea what they're talking
about. Let this continue?
But no, I think they made diesels better since that time.
Yes, yes.
I still pray for snow days.
Do you?
Yeah, that's the best.
But we don't have snow days here. We're at 24
rarely.
Hours.
Yeah.
So at
SUNY, we don't SUNY either. Yeah,
yeah, they don't really have them very often.
When the weather gets like this, you get a notice saying, reminding you that the contract says you will be at work.
No matter. Well, which is, you know.
You come from Greenwich,
right? Expected. No, the station.
I come from Great Barrington. When I taught at New Paltz, I was there every morning at 6 o'clock, no matter what. From Great Barrington in my little Volkswagen.
Sure.
They had two little guys with matches in the compartment.
Sure, the farmer bring it.
Yeah. On your feet.
So those are the days before the electric dipstick, obviously.
I mean, really, if you live in upstate New York, you're going to expect cold Januarys. It's just unrealistic not to.
You
so.
Do.
Well,
you
and dress in layers.
And as I said in the front office this morning, I would rather... none of it, you want to be cold, obviously. However, I can get to work in the cold, I can drive to work in the cold. Yeah. Whereas when it's, what they're dealing with to the south of us and to the east of us, with a lot of snow,
they're stuck.
Much, much difficult.
But I have
much
to commend you. You're always here. You're always here.
Well, In addition
to my remote starter, I also am thankful for a son who lives in Florida with a birthday in February. I have to go visit him. I have to.
That is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so make a note of that. Rosemary won't be here.
I better tell you those. It's a weekend. Don't worry.
Okay. Which is interesting, Joe, because recently we have had two... letters, one of which was yesterday, where's Ray?
Right.
As if Ray wasn't on the air.
Well, it came in while I was doing the news.
Yeah, well, no, but what they really meant is that somehow there was a conspiracy that we had conspired to not let you on the air.
Yes, and I'm in on the conspiracy.
I think you may be reading what may be into that, but okay.
And then there was the Rosemary tattoo, as
they say. That you disappeared me.
What'd you say?
You disappeared.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I who love you and honor you and all the rest of it. And that somehow we had conspired against you when you were just off doing your work, investigative work all over the world, doing that. Yep.
Yeah, so. My answer, they would say, "Where is Rosemary?" And I would say, "I have no idea, but I know she's coming back."
And we don't like her when she goes away.
And thanks, she's working on our side. I mean, that's the main thing. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about other things. Let's begin with the, you want to go on I was going to say pre-K dispute, but let's talk about Governor Christie here for a second, because I thought this was an interesting story. Where the now there are calls from more calls from governors and in this case Republican gubernatorial candidates, past gubernatorial candidates who say that the governor should, and Republicans who say that he should step down from the Republican Governors Association.
Which he is the head of.
And Cuccinelli? Former Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli said on CNN that he does not serve the goals of the RGA, the Republican Governors Association, by finishing the rest of his one-year term. From the perspective of setting aside this as an issue in other races, it makes sense for him to step aside in that role. And he becomes one of the first Republican officials to suggest that Christie step down while Democrats probe abuse of power allegations continue in the state of New Jersey. So my question for you, Alan, is twofold. One, how important is the Republican Governors Association in the grand scheme of things? Two, does the guy make a valid point?
Well, first of all, the term we always use at Camp Bronx House is he becomes PNG, persona non grata, and number two, it's a very important position because if you're running for president of the United States, these are favors you can be doing for people. Raising money goes down to Florida. He raises money for the candidate, but he doesn't even appear with him, apparently, according to the newspapers. And so nobody wants to be with him. He's got to be, somewhat problematic. And it helps you understand where he's going. But I think it's very important.
I thought it was one more sign of how weakened he's become because of all of this. And the fact that the charge came or the complaint against him came from Cuccinelli is really ironic in light of, I guess, what we're going to talk about later, the problems with the governor's ship in Virginia.
But, I mean, is this a chance for Republicans who some of whom said, "Hey, listen, how dare Christie have a photo op with President Obama after Sandy, and this is hurting our chances?" And is this the first chance for them to say, "Okay, well, here's a little payback for what you did"? Mm-hmm. In that election cycle.
But it's so fascinating. We've talked about this before, but I can never get over it. That it's the New York Times did a wonderful piece about Christie as a bully. And they listed a couple of weeks ago all of the events that, forget about any of this stuff, that had come before, like my pal at the Eagleton Institute, my mentor, they took away his money because he voted wrong on apportionment. He was on the apportionment commission. And what happens with bullies inevitably is people back off, and then one day, whether you're a journalist working for a conservative establishment or whether you are, a governor of New Jersey, one day you screw up and then everybody comes out and takes a bite.
Yeah, they're all piling on.
So when that happens and you say weakened, I guess, what is the obviously, we don't know the answer to this, but as it seems, as it perpetuates and it's all piling on, that how do you, if you are going to gain power back, and certainly enough power to, A, at very least, continue to govern the state of New Jersey, but B, to do what is widely expected to be the Republican nominee for president of the United States.
It's hard. I mean, I really think he's been so severely damaged, and I think these investigations, because I think they're going to be grand juries, they're going to be subpoenas, they're going to be people testifying under oath, and what did you know, and when did you know it? It's going to be very hard. Now, what's interesting here is I think that the Democrats probably think this is a terrific thing, and I'll tell you. One could build a conspiracy theory with the Times and going after him the way that they did early on. Let the record show that Rosemary's
grimacing. Skeptical of that. I think the news media goes after anyone in power. Well, Christie had power.
Yeah,
and
well,
charisma.
It's true. Okay, I accept that. But the fact of the matter is that with a weakened Christie, the Democratic chances are much, much higher in the presidential election. How do we know this? Because we know from the polling. Yeah. Nobody else has been able to gain any traction except for Christie, and Christie was after the purples, and the people in the middle like Christie because of just this other thing.
Slight disagreement again. I've always thought Jeb Bush is going to be the big candidate for the Republicans. I thought he was going to come in the last election, actually.
Except, Rosemary, that for some reason— he's never had an appetite for this thing, for the presidency.
Right.
And nobody knows what that reason is.
Well, those of us who lived in Florida under his gubernatorial reign know that his wife was not enthusiastic. He had family problems. And he fits his plans in with the whole Klan. And it didn't work out for him. But I don't think he ever gave it up.
And there also seems to be some familial tension there over this whole thing. And so whether that plays into it or not.
As I said, we don't know.
Yeah.
Rosemary raises the same kinds of rumors. You've heard about why Mario didn't run for president. I mean, people project.
Oh, no, those were not the same kind of rumors, Alex.
No, I don't mean, I don't mean it was the same thing. I mean, they're always in the absence of information. People will make stuff up.
Yeah. I think that Jeb was and remains a viable candidate, and Christie's weakening helps Democrats and it helps Jeb Bush.
But you're right. I don't like to agree with you, but you're right. Mm-hmm. Because there's this whole business of a family dynasty.
I don't like to agree with you, but.
There's a family dynasty. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
And people like that. They, you know.
Well, which is what's going on with the Clintons.
Yeah, it is.
So what do you say, let me just throw this out as a...
Can I just say one thing? I loved a line I heard on NPR earlier this morning. They were talking about art, and they said, Christie has had a great year, and then stopped. The announcer paused and said, that's the auction house, not the governor of New Jersey.
Some very clever young producer.
Yes. Nice. Good dramatic effect.
Yeah.
So let me just throw out a scenario and say, okay, if you are Governor Christie and you are, and again, I'm projecting what would be common sense. My common sense may vary from other people's common sense. But you say, okay, you know what? I'm just going to kill it right now and say, I have no intention of running for the presidency of the United States. What I want to hold on to right now is
the
governorship of the state of New Jersey.
Sure.
And if you cut that out right now,
do you win anything?
Does life become easier for that man?
Well, it becomes easier, but if you think that the Democratic Assembly is going to stop issuing subpoenas, or that they're not going to go after him, this is an opportunity. Politics is a zero-sum game. Either you're in power or you're not. They're going to go after him.
I guess I was sort of setting up for a redemption story. So they would continue to go even if he said, all right, look, I have no interest in running.
Yeah, I think that's set in motion.
Yeah. So
today I had head of the Republican Party, Ed Cox, on for the Capital Connection. We recorded early this morning at 7. And, he still very much admires his father-in-law, Dick Nixon. And he's willing to go to the Post and tell you all about what was happening. Now, I interviewed him from his home, and I said, are you still in bed? He said, no, but my feet are up on the bed, and I have a feeling Tricia was there listening. So he was extremely solicitous about his father-in-law. But Dick Nixon and all the wonderful things.
I'm not following this. So how is
Ed
the
Cox,
son-in-law's
is
his carefulness about his father-in-law? Relate that back to Christie? That's what I've lost here.
Well, because Joe raised the question of redemption. And there are a lot of people who think that in history, you're going to take a look at Dick Nixon, including Ed Cox, and look at his environmental record, which was excellent, going to China, opening things up. And then there was a small little mistake called Watergate.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap up this topic, and then we'll move on to others after news break. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WMC comes from Adirondack Folk School, Lake Luzerne, New York. Dedicated to teaching the arts, crafts, and culture of the Adirondack region, adirondackfolkschool.org. Northshire Bookstore, hosting Eve Ensler, presenting In the Body of the World, a memoir, in Manchester, Vermont, Wednesday, January 29th, 7 p.m., northshirebookstore.com. And Blue Homes, Modern Green Homes, featuring high ceilings and natural light, a blue breeze house in the Hudson Valley, open for tours on Saturday, January 25th, from 11 to 3 p.m., bluhomes.com/Hudson.
Welcome. Where's the elevator? Where's the elevator?
Welcome back to the
Wasn't that elevator music?
No. Very nice.
Welcome back to our
going
panel
up.
Discussion. We want
Let's dance.
Are we going up? I want to two things to talk about real quick before we go over to our NPR news break at the bottom of the hour that I wanted to mention because we were talking about the Chris Christie story. One is that we should mention that the governor was sworn in, took his second oath of office yesterday.
Happy occasion.
Yes, a very happy. Oh, good. Four more years of this misery. And then we were talking about this yesterday about the poll numbers and Christie's poll numbers, and then Quinnipiac came out with a poll that say the investigations have hurt Christie's national support. Asked if the governor would make a good president, only 35% of voters said yes, down from 50% 2 months ago. So, I mean, that's a hit, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a hit.
That's a hit.
So, yeah. What do you? And then,
is the turkey done yet?
Well, right.
You said it before. Put a fork in it.
Yeah, I think it's.
I believe that
really
was in the dipstick conversation, wasn't it?
You know, politics though, it's things change. You know,
I mean, 2 years we have a lot of redemption, right? Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of time.
The best thing the Democrats
rather
can do is make this investigation take a long time,
and they will.
Yeah.
One of the headlines in the I believe it's the LA Times today says that Governor Christie takes the oath again, but stormy days lie ahead, and that seems to really sum it up, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. And they're not talking about polar vortexes.
No,
I wonder what the conversations around the Christie dinner table are. You know, it's got to be a miserable time for them, don't you think?
I would think so. Well, I would think so.
Let's see what all the subpoenas have to say. And
well, either way, I mean, just
maybe
having
he comes
this
out of this
swirl
thing,
around.
You know, there's always that chance.
He might. That's the whole Dick Nixon reference. He might.
Well, Dick Nixon came out of it after he was dead.
No. When Dick Nixon ran against, you're a young man, but when Dick Nixon ran for governor and was defeated against Jerry Brown's father,
right.
He said you won't have Dick Nixon to kick around anymore.
That's right, he did.
And then he became president of the United States.
True enough, but now we're out of time.
Okay. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back right after this short news break from NPR. Good morning, and welcome to our roundtable panel, and it's a delight to have you with us. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here, University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter. Rosemary Armeo is here, and Jimmy Bielkind joins us, as he does on Wednesdays, to talk about state issues and help us tackle other big issues of the day from Capitol New York, or bureau chief, right? Am I right? Yes, thank you. Good to have you here, sir. Thank you.
Pleasure, privilege, honor, and especially because there's heat in here.
Yes,
we turned up the heat.
Not alone.
Jimmy, yes, we turned up the heat. We have a big fight around here. Those of us who are thin are a little bit more.
Here we go.
No, this is true. This is absolutely true.
No, it isn't.
What do you mean it's not? Who do I hear most from? I hear, you know, I'm not going to get into it, but well, I turned up the heat. In my executive position, I turned up the heat. This place is sub-zero. Otherwise.
Okay, so those of, because I can tell you right now.
Yeah, what?
I'm cold.
So it must really be cold out there.
See, it has nothing to do with it.
Okay.
See, our governor has a tendency to make rooms cold, especially when you start off. So there's a big speech, like the budget speech or state of the state speech. He'll have the room be purposefully cold, thinking that when a lot of people get in, the temperature will naturally rise. And he of course, doesn't want to get overheated in the middle of a speech.
Do you know this, or are you just making this up? You know this?
I know this,
he's one of the best Capitol reporters in the country, by the way, according to a new poll. You should mention that. He's trying to talk us out of it.
And the point being that, you know, as a gentleman, you know, sometimes you think that these Victorian constrictions of ties and collared shirts.
Right, and you and I have on.
And jackets, right? You know, because sometimes it's just... It's useful. It's really useful to wear these stupid things. Rosemary is smacking
weather,
her head.
Weather and blubber. Okay, we've covered that topic. Let's go on to Virginia governor.
Okay, former governor Bob McDonnell of Virginia and his wife Maureen were indicted Tuesday by a federal grand jury on charges of accepting more than $140,000 in loans and gifts in exchange for promoting the business of a political patron who was seeking special favors from the state government. The 14-count indictment filed by the U.S. state's attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia includes charges of fraud and soliciting loans and gifts from Johnny Williams Sr., the chief executive of Star Scientific, a maker of dietary supplements who hoped to use the governor to promote his products.
Okay, I'm overwhelmed again by this story, by the venality of the crime. If you're going to compromise your morals, your integrity, your the trust that the public has in you, can you do it for something big? This was for Armani gowns and for a ride in their patron's Ferrari. He had the guy who was trying, who bought them. He didn't try to. He did. He bought them. It gave them his house to use. And the governor's wife, also one of the indicted, asked if his Ferrari came with the house. I mean, I read this and just I'm so outraged by it.
Well, but as Jimmy will tell you, I think the problem here is that in order to convict these guys, you have to get them, A, talking into a microphone, and B, making an exchange. Say, if you do this, I will do this.
And they
this
have
for
that
you.
In this case, Alan. Yeah. They have email in which they're thanking this guy and making requests of this guy. And there was something he wanted. He runs, he's described as a businessman. What he did was run a company that makes dietary supplements, especially one that cures aches and pains. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's no FDA approval or oversight of any of this stuff. It's all
but
bogus.
They do it all the time. Yeah.
But their product is made of tobacco. And so this guy wanted the state to pay for research that would help his product out of the state tobacco, you know, research board. So there was definitely a quid pro quo. This is one that could be proved. And in fact, the governor has apologized for taking gifts and sent back a lot of the money.
We should note two things. One, on what you just mentioned, he said he had no special favors for Mr. Williams, and he said that he was innocent, and would vigorously fight these charges. The other thing that we should mention is here's a guy who was on the short list, I believe, for Mitt Romney as a running mate.
Yes, he was. Because he's attractive and he's interesting. He also apparently has huge credit card bills that existed even before his last race that are just coming to light now. He is financially indiscriminate in his own life, I think. And the indictment does not, I'm sorry, the indictment looks pretty solid if you take a look at
it. Well, you can only see, yeah.
I was going to say, you know, you mentioned Rosemary. You know, I can't believe that he essentially sold out for so little.
But they do it all the time. Governor of Connecticut gets his house painted by whatever.
Yeah. Well, I guess the larger issue is you have elected leaders, right? Be they Democrats, Republicans, Greens, Conservatives, whatever. And often these are people who have been thrust in a position of great power, but don't necessarily have a lot of money, don't necessarily have it. And all of a sudden they're occupying this world that is run by people, big business people, real estate interests, et cetera, with all kinds of wealth and power. And they have power, but not necessarily wealth. And so it can be very it can be very enticing for them. Look at Joseph Bruno here in the Capital Region. You know, there are certain elements here. And so...
But Bruno, unlike some of these guys, Jimmy, would have been playing the game for a long time.
Oh, certainly. So let me be very clear. Yeah. Joe Bruno was a successful businessman before he entered public life.
Sure.
And I don't... But it's this notion, and it's sort of this ever-present conflict. And so it's
how to privatize your position in order to get something.
Or even just how we allow our government officials to be influenced. What is allowed, what is not allowed, what's allowed under law, what is not.
They took money for their daughters.
Right. And this is quite,
And
this is quite clear. But, you know, here in New York, we have this discussion about, well, if it were in campaign context, would that be okay? And is there a big difference between here's $10,000 for your daughter's wedding and here's $10,000 for your reelection?
But here,
yes, there is.
Well, absolutely. Well, right, there's that argument, but his defense from the spring of last year has been, well, I didn't get it, and it all went through my family.
Yes,
that's his defense.
That is defense.
I mean, because he's saying
doesn't help in his wife getting indicted. You see, it's
right?
Like, oh, okay,
yes.
You're right. It did go to your family. Indict her too.
So it went to the daughter, it went to the wife,
Really, I think it's really nice that you're so, understanding, sympathetic. No. And you're trying to see both sides, which is what a good journalist does. But I am having a really hard time with this one because it's just so incredibly unnecessary. It's a ride in a Ferrari. Come on.
Well,
do you put your political future on?
That's the issue.
On the skids for a ride in a Ferrari.
To me, that's right.
But it isn't, it's the money, right?
As Christine Lavin has written in her wonderful folk songs, what could he have been thinking?
Yeah,
I mean, all of them. Malcolm Smith putting money into an envelope to get onto the Republican ballot for mayor in New York. According to Ed Cox, by the way, the Republican chair, in order to get the 6-for-1 matching money that he would have gotten if he was on any ballot. So that's amazing.
Well, I mean, Jimmy, you may have it right in that he's in this rarefied position too, where he is very powerful, and so you tend not to see that it's bad. It's
right.
Like just something due to you. It's one of the perks, like a bodyguard who follows you around all the time.
Right.
Did you say that? I didn't hear you say that. I thought you were.
No.
I'm not trying to excuse his behavior.
Yeah. You're trying to explain.
I'm just saying.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The alleged behavior, I should say.
Yes, you're innocent.
I'm not as sure as you are, Rosemary, by the way, that he gets convicted.
Okay, we'll Alan. $1.50, I bet you.
$1.50.
Okay.
There has been a shake.
The hands have been shaken.
Good.
The
quid
and the crow. The quid and the quo have been crowed.
Yes.
The quid and the crow.
Let us move on. We're going to take a break in a few minutes, but before we do, let's start in this story, which is the governor has rolled out his spending plan, and it is it came out yesterday afternoon. A lot of it was what we had kind of expected, and it had been leaked out and heard. And I guess the big headline come out of it, at least for Jimmy Vielkind, was a win-win on pre-K? Question mark.
Well, yeah, and so there has been since the victorious campaign of New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio a proposal in the air that de Blasio championed to raise taxes on people in New York City reporting more than $500,000 of income and use the money to fund universal pre-kindergarten as well as after-school programs within the city of New York. Now, under New York law, the New York City cannot raise taxes on itself unless it has state approval, meaning Bill de Blasio needs the state legislature and Governor Cuomo to sign off on this plan. And Governor Cuomo has indicated he's not keen on raising taxes. In fact, going into his reelection this year, he wants to be cutting taxes. So there had been this tension, and Cuomo has not condemned, he's not spoken against de Blasio's plan, he's certainly not embraced it. He's shown and indicated no appetite to move on it or to embrace it. And then in his budget, he announces a statewide plan to fund universal pre-kindergarten, including a pilot that could start off in the city of New York. It's something like in football, you know, a stiff arm. You know, you just put someone and keep them away as you keep running down the field.
And the teachers union, by the way, feels, I was talking to somebody yesterday who said that, we examine that budget and they're going to take the money out of our other stuff in order to fund the pre-K. And that's their analysis, which of course is interesting.
And
the
we
mayor
know.
Doesn't like it anyway. He doesn't. He's kind of stepped aside from that stiff arm.
Well, the mayor is saying that he's going to push ahead with his plan.
Right.
And there and is possibly a compromise where there's a compliment here. There's possibly a compromise where de Blasio wakes up one morning and says, "I got pre-K." Done.
the question is, he
wants this real revenue stream, which is going to be a 5-year thing and bring in about $530 million a year.
Sustainable.
It is estimated. Right. And as opposed to what Alan lays out as the counterargument from teachers union officials that, you know, the state already, according to many education advocates, is in arrears for an aid bump that was promised and for a pretty big cut in education aid that came in the 2011-12 budget and from which we are slowly building back up.
Here's my question.
Yeah,
can I ask a question? Okay, Cuomo apparently is doing this, if we were to understand the reporting, in order to enhance his own chances for re-election. He doesn't want higher taxes against wealthy individuals. How hurt is he if de Blasio wins and there is a tax?
Well, he's got, but let me just take a crack at that, if I may, and that is, you know, it is no secret that Elizabeth Warren is coming to town and that she's going to be with de Blasio and that this is now the progressive wing of the party.
Right.
So you got Cuomo with his tax cutting, trying to get the purples in the middle who are paying $25,000 on a simple little house on Long Island in taxes. And he's doing this tax cutting, which is a very attractive proposition. And on the other hand, you got de Blasio who says, "Come on, Democrats, remember who we are. Let's give everybody an equal chance to this." And this puts Cuomo in a bad spot.
Well, right. And it is... is the Senate Republican leader Dean Skelos yesterday said kind of archly, because he was referring to something that Cuomo had said the week prior, you know, there is a schism in the Democratic Party. No question about it. You're absolutely right, Alan. And so, you know, it's not so much a what does it do to Cuomo if he loses or what does it do to de Blasio if he loses. It's a question of just philosophies that are not aligned. And really a question for the state of which is going to be dominant in our statewide politics. And I think that Cuomo argues that he has tried to make the point to businesses, both within New York and around the state and indeed internationally, that you should come to New York, that all of this stuff you heard about tax and spend, tax the rich and spend, and as a result, you sort of spiral up and up in taxes. Cuomo is trying to turn the page from that, and he has very dutifully worked to try and reduce taxes where he can. He's introduced $2 billion over the next several years, slew of tax cuts, many of which are targeted at businesses, some of which, Alan, as you pointed out, are targeted at homeowners, people with things
small,
where there's...
modest homeowners.
Well, but just, and you know, it's going to be $300, $500, or it's going to be your property taxes aren't going to go up, or you're going to get a rebate check for the difference this year. And that, you know, I think that Cuomo... he believes in it as fiscal policy, but he recognizes it on a grander scale as a signal to the rest of the country and as a signal as he tries to revive particularly the upstate economy with a new business manufacturing base, with a high-tech base like we've seen here in the capital region, like he's trying to metastasize through to Utica where they're building a chip plant, to Buffalo where they've announced a new research park on the site of one of the former steel mills in Lackawanna. And I think that he wants to stop what he perceives to be a negative signal.
Now, metastasize is not a great word for export. What might have been better than metastasize, which is, after all, the spreading of a cancer, right?
Forgive me. It was flippant.
No. I just thought it's interesting. I think it's a fight for the soul of the Democratic Party.
Okay.
And I think he, at the same time, he's trying to bring in the middle. And bring in voters who don't want to pay $25,000 in taxes on a little shack. They are not necessarily Democrats, by the way.
Well, but that's exactly the point, right? So Governor Cuomo wants to win re-election. He wants to win by a large margin to demonstrate his political strength. And he knows that the way to do that is to try and appeal across the board, to try to take someone who's perhaps traditionally voted Republican in, say, Nassau County, Long Island, or even in the North Country, or even here in the capital region.
If I may interject again, remains unanswered. If the wealthy in New York State were to be taxed more, could not they both achieve their goals? You would bring relief to the little $25,000 homeowner in Long Island, and you would be able to start new programs or add to new programs such as pre-K. Where is the downside?
For Cuomo?
Yeah. Why is
again,
this being resisted
see, again,
so much?
Again, he could see it, and he would argue that it would be a negative signal that runs contrary to his agenda. And that's why he would be resistant to it. And the other, if I could be cynical or perhaps more crass in the explanation, these are the donors. Don't piss off the donors.
That's what I wanted to get at. So,
Perhaps. But I think there's an element to that, but I don't think that is the big driving
force.
So
he isn't taking rides in Ferraris, but he is like changing his policy to accommodate his donors. Aha.
Well, no. It's a beautiful thing to watch from a political science.
I'm glad you added that from a political side.
I think that's a little bit too critical of the governor. I don't think he's making policy. I've been getting the opposite, Jimmy.
I've been standing up for Cuomo, taking a lot of crap for that here on this program.
We just used two words I would prefer we didn't use on our air anymore.
That's okay. Took a lot of criticism.
The Metropolitan Opera changed their word.
But just the other day.
To that word, actually.
Just the other day, we were talking here about the budget just before it had come out, and there was a lot of criticism about whether the economics of it, the money, the math of it worked, whether he could really promise a surplus to cut taxes.
And there are still questions
time.
About that.
Okay, where are we on that?
It's very much unclear. If you look, the presentation that was given yesterday predicts a $2.2 billion surplus in a couple of years. But it's unclear how that number that was presented and touted by Governor Cuomo incorporates the tax cutting package and incorporates all the assumptions about the pre-K rollout. The state's financial plan is really sort of what the real budget analysts look at. And that arrived later in the day than, of course, the press packet, which, you know, they're happy to give out, and which, you know, is under no obligation to be anything other than a press pack and to be the best possible face on a plan. And so I'm still parsing through that. You know, E.J. McMahon, a smart guy, a fiscal analyst, certainly a guy who comes from the right wing of life. He's the president of the Empire Center, which is a business-backed think tank.
And he's a guest here all the time.
Right.
We love him.
But he said he's run the numbers and he still sees deficits in the out year. And he says that the number that Cuomo has presented as a surplus is not encompassing of everything. So that's something that I'm going to be looking at more today.
And Ed Koch said the exact same thing on the air this morning, that it's the out years after the election.
Yeah,
but what Cuomo essentially did was he assumed that he would be able to hold state spending growth to 2%. Mm-hmm. He also assumed that part of that would mean holding Medicaid, which is this thing that kind of would go up like a hot air balloon, he'd be able to hold that to about 3 or 4% growth per year. And in order to do that, the state has come up with lots of plans. It's come up with a plan that was implemented actually in 2011 by something called the Medicaid Redesign Team. But in order to implement that, the state has been counting on savings, right? If you're going to save money through medical records, you need to spend the money to computerize them, right? This is just an example. And that money was hopefully going to come from the federal government in the form of a waiver where we say we saved you $17 billion, give us $10 billion back. And Cuomo is assuming that waiver will be approved and therefore assuming he can hold that line on spending.
We need to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue and wrap up our conversation. We welcome your comments as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break.
Support for WMC comes from ophthalmic consultants of the Capital Region, including ophthalmologist Dr. Alan Zeker, performing refractive cataract surgery with new technology lens implants and astigmatism reduction, ophthalmicconsultants.com, and the Bardavon, presenting classical guitarist Sharon Isbin, guitarist Stanley Jordan, and Romero Lombabo, performing together on Friday, February 7th, bardavon.org.
Welcome back to the roundtable and our discussion this morning. Jimmy Vielkind is with us, named by the Washington Post one of the best state capital reporters in the entire country. And he joins us at the panel this morning. Congratulations on
that
designation.
Joe. Money will be in the mail.
very nice list. from the Washington Post and their site, The Fix, which I think is an unfortunate name. Rosemary Arameo, of course, a University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter, and WAMC's Alan Chartok. I want to get to this last story. We only have a few minutes, but there's a very really interesting story in the New York Times this morning about a twin brothers who are seniors at Yale, Peter Zhu and Harry Yu, who set out to build a better, more user-friendly version of the university's online course catalog. But as Mark Zuckerberg found many decades or two decades ago when he decided to build a better version of Harvard's undergraduate student directory, these things can get sticky and can take a life, take on a life of their own.
Wonderful intro to that story.
Yale shut down the brothers' website last week, helping to turn a local campus issue into something of a civil rights cause. Now, after a few days of controversy, a similar tool is up and running, and it appears to be Yale that has gotten a schooling. The brothers said that they were tired of the university's clunky online catalog, ultimately, their online course catalog, which made it hard to see how students from previous semesters had evaluated the course. So in December of 2012, the brothers, both computer science majors, came up with their own version. They called it the Yale Blue Book Plus. And a reference to the Yale Blue Book, a course selection website that other students had developed and sold to the school a couple of years ago. It's a fascinating story because you ultimately have the best and the brightest, and you have these really smart kids who are at the university, right, and they're looking at the problems within the university. In most cases, this is what you would think the university would want, and yet they're saying, eh, not so fast.
And just bluntly shut down the site. Even they complained to the brothers about their problems with the site. The brothers said, oh, okay, we'll work with you to fix it. And the next day, that Monday, the site was just shut down, which, of course, is the brothers, I think, accurately portray as an impingement of freedom of speech.
Now, we academics who have been at this game for a while know, especially, I know that you know this, Rosemary, don't like criticism.
University people are amazingly thin-skinned everywhere.
When it comes to their own professors.
Yes.
You've been tough on them, and appropriately so. And one of the things that occurs to me is that I had colleagues back there who did very badly in these evaluations. And now out comes this thing, and I'm only hypothesizing, but I'm betting that the Yale people probably heard from some of the professors who did not want to make it easier for people to look up how they were done in class.
And the best part of the story is that in the middle of this controversy, one of the twin brothers' friends in the computer science department in 12 hours puts together a roundabout way to get into the system that the university cannot control. So, I mean, information gets out.
And says,
the truth gets out.
And says when he does it publicly, I hope they don't throw me out of Yale for doing this, which is, you know, the ultimate sort of sanction.
And Monday night, Yale backed down, as we've mentioned, and said Mary Miller, the dean of Yale, said in an open letter to the Yale community, "In retrospect, I agree that we could have been more patient in asking the developers to take down information that they had appropriated."
Well, Rosemary, I mean, you must be on ratemyprofessors.com or whatever. Yeah, or whatever it is. And Alan, I don't know if
I write that. Yeah,
it was just coming up when I was sort of on the board.
No, it's awful. And
it's different, Jimmy. There, you have to take the, if you're a student, you have to go look up the thing and then participate. And very few students do it.
I also think it was they used the actual rating system by the university, not an offline thing like
that. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's
exactly
right.
Much
different.
And one sort of anecdotal official. We're at 10 seconds.
Shut up.
But that's okay.
Love this story.
Thank you all. Yes, read it all. Roundtable WAMC.org. We will be back with more program after this short break.